We grew from $250,000 when I started to $4 million over the course of 4 years. And wait, what happens with that? All of a sudden, you can't just operate without clarity. Speed of trust now becomes how documented or standardized is what everyone's responsible for. Do we have a leadership team that represents the right decision makers that are able to have responsibility and take action in the most important aspects of the business? And our answer for us was no. And so what did we do? Path for Growth.
Well, hey there, if we have not yet met, my name is Alex Judd. I'm the founder of Path for Growth, and this is the Path for Growth podcast. Now, as a business, we exist to help impact-driven leaders step into who they were created to be so that others benefit and God is glorified. And this podcast is just another iteration of how that mission comes to life. Well, today I get to share with you a conversation that I had with the newest member of the Path for Growth team, Matt Aiken. We've actually known Matt for a long time. He's been a member of the Path for Growth community and a customer of Path for Growth because he was the CEO of Keymaster Games, just a wildly influential and effective board game company that just does absolutely incredible work. Well, it was recently that Matt's kind of been engaging in a transition and reached out to us and said, man, I think I really have a passion for what y'all do as one-on-one coaches for business leaders. And that just fit perfectly because all of our one-on-one coaches are leaders who have owned or run a business before. I'm so excited for you to get to know Matt because there's so many principles associated with his career and associated with everything that he's learned being trained to become a Path for Growth coach and now is learning from working with customers in a one-on-one context. This is just such a vibrant conversation. I think you're really going to appreciate Matt's energy, his insightfulness, and his perspective. So here's my conversation with the newest member of the Path for Growth team, Matt Aiken. Matt, I've been so stoked for this conversation. This is going to be a lot of fun. Let's start with just one experience from your career that you look at and you'd say, man, that was like really transformative or informative with regard to the way that I look at and think about leadership.
Yeah, I've had a crazy career. So there's several moments that stick out, whether it was crazy project I did for the Coast Guard, outsourcing a huge process to India. But the thing that really popped up as it relates to leadership was I was a part of an unhealthy leadership culture at a church and was I was an executive assistant for a leader in a church. And so I was almost a fly on the wall to watching toxic leadership play out. And just sitting and spending a decade now reflecting on these, like these small moments. Toxic leadership is not a bunch of big moments that happen that explode. It's small decisions that compound over a long series of time with a lack of accountability that just snowball into this train wreck, right?
Yeah, well, I love that you kind of describe it because I know a little bit of the background of what you're talking about. It's like you describe it as like, oh, an unhealthy culture, right? But this is not just like your average run-of-the-mill unhealthy culture. This is like the nationally recognized hallmark for unhealthy culture right now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so fascinating because stuff pretty actively right now being written and talked about everything that devolved and went on there and kind of using it as a case study for hopefully more proactive and healthy leadership in the future. But it's so wild to just hear your perspective because, dude, you were in the closed door meetings. Like you saw stuff happen. I would just love to know from that perspective, before we jump into kind of the background in your career and all of that, you went there. So I'm like so interested for us to talk about this. Like, man, when you look back at that now, what were the biggest leadership lessons that you pulled from just getting to see that occur over an extended period of time?
Well, I think the first thing that comes to mind is that there's an external perception and an internal perception. Both of those are perceptions, not reality. And so, you know, I was an outsider of this organization, a follower, passionate person, like these people are at the forefront of what's great in this space, right? This church is doing stuff innovative. They're reaching people. Look at the numbers. Look at the stats. So that was the perspective I had coming in. And then when I was in, I had an internal perspective. oh man, internally, look at these things that are going so, so well. Look at these numbers. Look at these stats. I was fishing for things that supported my assumptions.
So like confirmation bias almost,
right?
Huh?
Right. And so as a leader, I was walking in, and if I would hear something that was off, I would almost tune it out, right? And I'd go, I'm not sure what's going on there, but I don't really need to look into it. Oh, this other thing, this shiny bulb, this new opportunity, man, this is incredible. I can't believe that I get to dive into it. I can't believe we're diving into it together. And so that's the internal perception number three, is it's not just my perception. It's all of these people around us. You're trying to almost gather people together to say, man, this is going so well. Man, look at this ground we're taking. So we're kind of encouraging and affirming, not actually holding people accountable. So like if the principle is leaders who are held accountable, it can either be held accountable to perception or reality.
Mm. And you have the ability to, this is so good, Matt. Not only can you be held accountable to perception or reality, or you will be held accountable to perception or reality, you have the ability in leadership to create a culture where you are held accountable to perceptions.
Right.
Like you can create the shared values and behaviors within your team where it's like, oh, we just ignore head tilts, or we just ignore when things get said a little bit brashly or over the top and exaggerate, where we say, that's not exactly true, but you know, that's just like a personality quirk or something like that. And it's crazy that, like, I feel like what you're highlighting is that as a leader, you have the ability to create a culture that's based around perceptions, but you have a responsibility to not do that and create a culture that's based on reality. Does that feel right?
It feels dead on. I think I could even maybe make an analogy to parenting. When your kids are young, the power of your personality can persuade them to move in certain directions. So as a leader, the power of your personality in a small organization can persuade people to act under your authority. As a kid grows, what needs to happen? You lose your authority. You need to be growing your influence. Well, in an unhealthy leadership culture that I was in, the power of personality no longer had authority, and it was not replaced with influence. And so when that leader is not getting the result that they were hoping for, right? Because their personality wasn't doing it. The authority was no longer there. The influence was no longer there. What are they going to do? They're going to start yelling, fussing, complaining, and acting spoiled. And so what happens then? Okay, we got to get rid of the people, right? What happened? We got to get rid of the people that are speaking up. We need to replace them with people now that listen to my authority and I have influence. Again, external perspective, I have influence. And we just kept churning. The moment influence was lost and people spoke up, let's replace them with someone outside where I have influence and authority.
What I love about the way you kind of broke this apart is, like, you started off by saying it didn't happen all at once. It was drip, 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 like small things over an extended period of time. And all we hear about is the extravagant things that were manifestations of those drips. But then also you're like, oh no, like it's not necessarily like it was a methodology that was intentionally followed, but there are very clear steps that can be taken to get the type of results that we're talking about. And I love that you highlight those two things, because it can be so easy to look at an organization like that that just collapses, right? Whether it's in the secular sphere or in the ministry sphere, right? There's so many examples of organizations that just collapse because of poor culture and toxic culture and all of that. It can be so easy to look at those examples and say, I just can't understand, right? Like, I just can't understand how a leader could ever do those things. Or I just can't understand how 200 staff members could just go with the flow. And man, the people that say, I just can't understand, are the people that freak me out the most, because I'm like, you should probably understand. Because I feel like one of your perspectives, Matt, is like, maybe what you took away from that time is like, oh, I'm wildly capable as a follower of opting in for stuff like this. But then also I'm wildly capable of being that type of leader if I'm not hyper vigilant. Does that feel right?
It feels absolutely correct. I mean, that's where I've spent the last 10 years of going, hey, how do I guard my heart, guard myself against becoming that person? Because I think so many people have listened to the story and they've sat with an outside perspective and said, no way, not me. I would never be like that. It's almost like the Pharisee beating their chest. God, thank you so much that I'm not like that tax collector. I'm not like that Gentile, man. Thank you, God, for making me to be me. And that's, people go, oh, I'm not that Pharisee. No, I'm not that at all. But absolutely, you have the capability inside. The sin's there. And so then the question is, what are we doing to either be held accountable by friends, to be engaged in the scripture, listening to the spirit? What are the things that I'm doing, the people that are surrounding me, that are keeping me on the path of righteousness versus the path, in this we could take it, the path of healthy growth versus the path of toxic growth.
Mm, that's right. I love that you just kind of casually equated healthy growth to biblical righteousness. That feels, that's an intense marketing strategy. Okay, so I kind of two maybe practical questions. I would love to know how your experience in that organization affected you years later, whenever you're now the CEO of a multi-million-dollar organization, right? Yeah. How did your experience several years before in a toxic organization influence the way you approach leadership in that responsibility?
Yeah. I'm going to borrow from Chris Voss here. And he talks about this all the time in Never Split the Difference. I'm going to give you a tool that you can use in one of two ways. You can either use it for manipulation to your own end and your own gain, or you can use it in service of others. And so anytime you're deploying the skills and tools of Never Split the Difference, right? Mirroring, labeling, you know, asking your how and why question or how and what questions, you always have a result in mind. Mm-hmm. And so when I was leading an organization and things weren't going my way, I was using all those tools to say, hey, how do I get my people aligned with my way? But I didn't have another leader around me who was saying where we're going is the right way, or how we're getting there is the right way. And so I look back on that and I see it, hey, it's playing out right now in my business. You know, we're growing rapidly. We're making the jump from 1 million to 4 million in about a year. And it's like, okay, things are going amazing. Things are going so well. I'm just going to keep doing the same things. And we're not going to implement the structure of, hey, is where we're going, where we want to go. Mm. I'm just making a decision. And when someone argues with the decision, what am I doing? I'm asking the questions until they fall in line. And it's like, oh, I just became what I saw. Thankfully, not in a way that I was manipulating and using people, like not an abusive way. I just was using all of the tools at my disposal to head in a single direction. This is where I'm going, without pausing to work with partners, without pausing to work with other stakeholders to go, hey, is this aligned with our vision? Are we accomplishing our mission? You know, are our values being played out? Are we actually standing for what we set out to do? And in that way, you just go, hey, I can use this tool to accomplish what is good and set and right, or I can use this tool to accomplish what I want.
Man, one of the things that I feel like that highlights for me is just that the stories we read about this are always of these massive organizations that have gotten to a point where the collapse has become wildly visible. But what I feel like you're highlighting is that, like, man, the seeds are planted in like the early stages, and it makes sense for like church planters or bootstrappers or solopreneurs or small business owners with a team of only 10 people that it's like, oh, you're probably the most susceptible to this at that stage because you're moving so fast. Your business is going to move at the speed of your decisions. And it's you, if you're not careful, unless you take steps to get a leadership team or to put structure in place, like the only strategy for growth and forward motion that the business needs is going to come through you. And so then if you don't shift and change and introduce structure and systems and process and values and principles and other leaders in the room, like if you don't take intentional steps to do that, you're going to look up one day and you might be successful. And now you've got 50 people and it's still revolving entirely around your quirky personality, which is incredibly defective and imperfect. And so it's almost like no one's setting out intentionally to do this. It's just the compounding result of a certain trajectory.
Yeah. And then you reach that place, right? You're moving at breakneck speed. You're making all these decisions. And hey, what's the principle? The more you lead, the more you need. Well, hey, if you don't have a process for actually fulfilling that need, what are you going to start doing? Well, you're going to start people pleasing. You're going to start using your tools, not for the outcome of the business, but the outcome for you. And so the way that played out for me, that I saw play out at this organization, was, oh, now I'm like picking one or two people on my team and I'm making decisions that make them happy. And then they're affirming me. And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm a great leader. Look at me, guys. You're so thrilled with the decision. You're so thrilled with where we're going. But again, what is that missing? It's missing the, where are we going? And is it in alignment with our mission, values, and vision? No, what we're doing is spending time brushing each other's egos. Oh, How many times have I sat in meetings where people are just, you know, they're just not encouraging one another. Encouragement is not, you rock, you're doing great. Encouragement is, you know, hey, like this weakness, you saying, identifying this weakness is not something broken about you. It's just identifying, now this is the circumstance in which we must be successful. So it's like this moment of, okay, hey, we built this team. Now, is the team just here to rah-rah one another? Or is this team actually unified, facing forward together in alignment?
Yeah. So what is the step you, like when you think about it now, if you were to name one step that, man, to help us guard against this individually, like what should I be doing personally to help me guard against becoming that type of leader? And then what is one step we can take organizationally to guard against becoming that type of leader, Matt?
I think it's the same in both. It's starting with the end in mind. That's the thing. If I think back to when I was a customer of Path for Growth, you know, my coach would look at me and say, hey, at the end of this season, at the end of this quarter, what needs to be true? And I'd go, well, okay, well, what needs to be true? I promise you, your answer is not going to be, well, I feel really great. I'm feeling egotistical, right? That's not going to be the answer. You start going, well, what needs to be true? Man, we need informed clarity about the next three board games that we're going to make. I ran a board game publishing company, right? So, hey, I need a sense of informed clarity around what are the next three titles we're going to release and how we get there. What I need by the end of this quarter is to work with my creative director to have a plan for that. Okay, cool. Now that all of a sudden says that now I know where I'm aiming, right? And so as an organization, now I speak up. I say, hey, leadership team, hey, partners, hey, staff, this is what right now is my priority and the next level. And this is how it plays into our organization's mission. All right. This is how we're supporting it. Same thing personally, right? I think back to the birth of my fourth kid. Her name's Mabel. She's 17 months old. She is amazing. When we were preparing for that birth, I asked my wife the question, hey, what do you want to be true about the first 40 days after Mabel arrives? Right? Because I knew what my priority was. My priority was to create an environment where my wife can be just fully focused on this new season and this new role of mother of four. And that coming out of that season, she would be energized and healthier than in the past, and I would be ready to step back into my next season. So I knew what winning looks like. I didn't know how to get there though. And so starting with the end of mind, I'd say, hey, right, great leaders extract answers from people. Hey, what needs to be true at the end of your 40 days? Wrote those out and we said, okay, now what's the plan? What are the actions we're gonna take to get there? Right, we had vision, we had aim of where we're going. So the same in both.
I love that it's aim, and it's aim not created by me, it's aim created by we, right? It's a collaborative effort. And that what we're not talking about here, and what I don't think you're advising, is just in all organizations, vision by committee, where we just sit down and say, where do we think we should go? Mm-hmm. But rather it's a facilitated process of everyone inputting the best information that they have to help come up with a destination that is really, really clear. And that's broad, right? That, you know, if we're not careful, winning looks like, well, just having the baby is winning. And it's like, well, then don't be surprised whenever you're irritated or frustrated because certain things that you expected were going to happen didn't happen, right? And yeah. So it's like thinking broad enough and big enough about what the win actually is holistically, right? For all the people involved. Really good, Matt. Okay, you've kind of, you've dropped a couple of nuggets here about the career path that you've followed. You're like, we've got this toxic organization, we've got board game company, like, how does this all fit together? And I still am not quite sure how it all fits together, Matt, but I'd love for you just to walk us through, like, the path from you graduating school up to where we're at today.
I'd love that. I think it actually starts my sophomore year when I met Christ. In college, directionless, you know, showed up at this school to, you know, have a great social experience, lifestyle, and then met the Lord. And all of a sudden, my aim changed. And so this is, you know, I'm sitting here my senior year after like 18 months of that kind of like, I'm on fire for Jesus. I'm reading, I'm learning. I'm seeing the need for missionaries. I'm seeing the need for pastors and leaders. Meanwhile, I'm getting trained as an accountant and a supply chain management leader, right? And so I'm going, how do I reconcile these two? Oh, maybe I'll become an executive pastor. Maybe, oh, you know what? I'll go to seminary. So this is October 2008, worst month of the recession. You know, I'm saying, oh yeah, I'm applying to seminaries. That's what's up. I'm going to go to seminary next with no plan. Like, am I going to be a pastor? I'm going to be a church planner. But I just know I'm passionate about this thing. I'm going to go pursue it. And my dad, who we talked about authority and influence, no longer had authority, but he had done a good job of influence. This is one of the only times that I can remember post-college, my dad telling me what to do. He goes, hey, Matt, you have a job offer from one of the best accounting firms in the world with a signing bonus, the worst month. Well, you didn't know it was the worst month, but in the midst of a recession. I think you should take it. And then, you know, 2 years later, you could go to seminary, right? And so I'm going, oh. Yeah, that sounds good. This sounds like a great. So I sign up, you know, my October of my senior year, have this job. And again, didn't really have a vision for what that was like. Just knew I have a skill. I'm pretty good at accounting. I know what an accountant does in consulting. Let's go do it. Jump in, you know, fast forward 2 years later, I have learned what it means to do, you know, be a client manager, to make the client happy, to be able to effectively manage time, creatively come up with solutions. I'd say from that time, I did two amazing projects. First, Deepwater Horizon, the oil spill.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I slept in the office overnight. Not a healthy thing to do regularly, but when you're 22, 23 and don't have a spouse or a girlfriend, like, it's no big deal, whatever. Deepwater Horizon happens and BP is responsible for paying the Coast Guard for using its planes. And so one day our client walked in, not in scope, says, hey, we don't think BP is paying us the right amount. We need you to go through all these flight records and tie them to people getting paid.
Dang. So this is like forensic accounting. It sounds right. Yeah. I mean, you're literally trying to catch them in the act is what you're doing.
Right. Yeah. So I've been doing audit. I've been some IT audit, making sure systems, processes, that's what I did. I made sure systems and processes were controlled, right? They resulted in the right outcome to avoid fraud or inaccuracy. So we're doing that. I spent two nights at the office working through this project. It was amazing. Like, just the coolest thing.
My goal for this conversation, Matt, was I just hope we can give people a picture of just how nerdy Matt actually is. And I think you let the cat out of the bag whenever you said, we stayed in the office two nights in a row and did this accounting project. It was awesome. I think you knocked it out of the park. I think they get it now.
Yeah. I just remember coming home and my roommate going like, oh man, I'm so sorry you've been working so late. And I remember going, it was the time of my life. That was amazing. our team was unified. We were making progress and success, right? And it was that moment of going like, oh, this, it's not about how much you work. It's about how bought in you are to what you're doing. And do you feel like you're making an impact, right? We talk about the diagnostic, like, does your work matter? In that moment, I was like, I know my work mattered. I just recovered $10 million for the government. And so that played into really, it altered the trajectory of the rest of that career or that time of just going like, okay, if I'm tying the result to what I'm doing, I'm having a blast. And so the next thing I did was I valued the whole Coast Guard fleet. Really fun project. Won't bore you with that. It's another one of those nerdy ones. But in the midst of this, I'd spent 2 years going like, oh, I think I like this. You know, oh, I'm thinking about seminary. I apply to seminaries 2 years in, right? I get accepted to Gordon-Conwell. And then I get the opportunity. I go like, oh, wait a second. I'm actually loving my job right now. What's going on? And then I get the opportunity to go work for this church that I get reached out to by the president of this church planning organization. Hey, I looked at your resume that you submitted, I don't know how long ago. You seemed like you'd be perfect. Come out and interview. And that was that moment. I remember March 20th, 2011. I had just been on a first date with my now wife. I get an email, hey, come work for this church. And I was like, all right, Lord, what do we got? So finally pursued that. Went and go worked for a church planning organization that I was incredibly passionate about. And what did I do in the 12 months that I was there? I helped him fire someone. I led an investigation against my boss. I watched the leadership be transitioned to a toxic leader and then transitioned to a healthy leader and asked, hey, Matt, do you want to come? You want to come move to a new place? Because we're gonna put this church planting organization in a new state, new church. Someone else is taking over. It's like, no, I'm dead. I'm tired. I'm exhausted. I don't know if I believe in this leadership culture anymore. And out of that, which we talked about a lot, I don't want to talk about it too much. Tired, exhausted, pregnant with our first kid. A friend from college watched me tweet or saw a tweet that I put out there in Nashville exploring the future. And he goes, hey, are you looking for a job? I said, yes, I am. He said, okay, hey, you want to come do IT audit at a health insurance company? Never really done that before. Have no idea what this company is or what they do. But on Friday, I said, sure, that would be great. I interview on Friday, I have a job offer on Monday. And I go, okay, Lord, we're going to do some trust. I know I need health insurance. I know I have needs, right? So let's do this. Ended up moving back to Nashville and starting an amazing career at a huge health insurance company, Cigna, right? One of the largest health insurance companies out there. And going this journey of, one, I don't have the skills to do a job. And what do I have to do in order to do that? I have to learn them, right? So go through this series of learning how to do IT audit. I had a peer that was that came in after I started. He was a peer, but he was clearly superior to me. So what did I have to do? I had to go find another job in the company, right? He's going to get that promotion. I'm having another kid. We got to grow salary. What are we going to do? Let's go find something else in the organization to do. So coming out of that, working in a toxic IT leadership structure, right? Watching more toxic leadership play out where I have my pet project. Everybody else is going to come aligned to make this project happen. I go, hey, I don't think this is for me. I go and I get the opportunity to start working on outsourcing the accounting audit function internally to India. So I got to do an outsourcing project for accounting, right? This is not something I ever trained. I didn't learn how to do it. And oh, by the way, I'm not sure if I had the skills to do it. And so what's the first thing that my boss did? She said, hey, this is what we do. By this time, we need all of these people trained and onboarded. All right. And that means that they need to be able to test all of our internal controls and hand them over to our auditor. Great. How do I do that? Okay, here's what we're going to do. And we start working on, okay, not only this is how we lead meetings, this is how we onboard, but this is the skills. Hey, this is the moment you did this really well. We started evaluating like, hey, on this meeting, I sat in and I heard you say this thing, or I were able to ask this question that really highlighted that they didn't understand, or you asked this question to highlight that they did understand. We started cranking through that.
So can I ask you a question about that? You were working in an organization with me recently on a little bit of a consultative gig that we do once a quarter. And it was a rather large and rather complex organization that you know what I'm talking about, right? You know the situation that I'm talking about, that we were talking to them and It was in that situation that one of the things that I realized, like, oh man, I'm so glad Matt's here, because you have had experiences working for large, complex organizations. And it sounds like you learned a lot during your time at Cigna.
Yeah.
I would just love to know, like, now that you're really focused on the leadership and business growth space, when you look back at that time at Cigna, what are the things that you learned about complex organizations, organizational structure, systems and processes, looking back at Cigna, that is now a part of your tool belt?
I think what you just did in my rabbit trail is the same thing that I would apply to what I learned in a complex, large organization. It's that as you are operating, it's really easy to just run where there are no walls, barriers, or hurdles. Oh, I'm telling a story, right? This is where I'm going. And I remember this moment and this moment and this moment. But where was I actually headed? And so what I saw is throughout my time in corporate, big corporate America, is that the most effective leaders helped gently nudge back to where we're going at the right consistency and with the right consistency and cadence, right? Whether that's in a one-on-one meeting or that is in a big project meeting. What I learned was that we're really good at having our little dominion, our kingdom, and operating it with as much autonomy as we possibly can. And two things happen. Either people do that and that becomes just a dead heap of flesh. Sorry, that's too grotesque. It becomes an ineffective arm of the organization, or you use it to actually take ground that's aligned with what leaders in the company are trying to accomplish. And so, in my time there, I learned that there are all these kingdoms, right? We are so good as leaders of leading. And so what do we end up doing is we have our people, we kind of build our border, we plant our flag, this is what we're doing. And we can have two options. We can either use that to the benefit of others in the company, or we can use that to the benefit of our organization.
Yeah. One of the things that I think about that too, that I'm really interested in, Matt, is we teach and talk about that idea a lot of, like, it was something that I read, I think it was in a Tim Ferriss book once, where he was interviewing a chess grandmaster, and the chess grandmaster said, like, everyone thinks strategy is knowing 10 moves ahead from where you're at. And he said, sometimes that's strategy, but more often than not, great strategy is just having more awareness of the moves available to you in the present.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things that I see oftentimes is that when people go from working for or in a rather large organization, like what you did, and then find themselves in a startup environment, of course, there are some of those people that they just get crushed because they're not ready to bootstrap something and they're like used to bureaucracy and all of that. But there's some people that really thrive, like they move further, faster. And I often think that the reason why they're able to do that is just because they have more awareness of the moves available to them, right? Yeah. It's like they work for this massive organization. They saw a billion different things with a billion different variables play out in a billion different ways. And they were able to take that and bring it with them to a smaller organization and into a startup environment. Was there anything that you learned at Cigna that you took with you to the board game company that we'll talk more about here in just a second that really influenced the way you led and made decisions, Matt?
Yeah, I didn't have the words for it then, but I can now. It's that organizations move at the speed of trust. So, right, if you're thinking back to this situation, we were talking about, oh man, what is it like to be in a matrix environment to report to multiple kings of those fiefdoms, right? Well, I was most effective when they each trusted me and they each trusted each other, right? So my job is to serve my customer internally. And when you're in a corporate world, your customer is both, hey, who's buying our products, but also who am I working for in different departments. And so, hey, when they're trusting me that I have their best interest in mind, that I have the skills necessary to do it, that I get it, right? I'm able to run and they're able to get the results they want, but it can't just be trusting me. There needs to be a collective trust, right? We need to be able to say, oh, hey, these kingdoms are in an alliance with one another. So if I just keep going with the analogy, it moves at the speed of trust. So as I moved into a new company, what is it like in the early days? Hey, there's so much to do. Everyone that's in the organization If you see something to do, if you see something, say something, or if you see something, do something. Mm. And you have to have the trust that they have the skills necessary, that we're all moving in the same direction. We grew at the speed of trust. I can point to the moment where trust started to degrade, and I can point to you shrink at the speed of distrust.
Yeah, that's so good. And I mean, even just in that too, it's a step in that process is like label your stakeholders, right? Mm. Investors or leaders, board, team members, customers. A lot of times I think leaders of organizations think they have one stakeholder and that's the customer. And it's like, that is a very important stakeholder, if not the most important stakeholder. But if the only stakeholder that trusts you is the customer and your team, your board, and your investors or other leaders don't, you're screwed, right? Because yeah. You're not going to be able to serve the customer stakeholder. And so label the stakeholders, build trust with those stakeholders. And then even what you're saying is create an environment where trust exists between all stakeholders at every level. Yeah.
Yeah. I think about in the board game world, it's really easy to think about who is my customer? Well, it's the person sitting at a table playing a game. And as far as I'm concerned, they are the person that's in our mission statement, right? They're the one that we exist to serve and help grow and bring joy and imagination to. But I have more than just that customer. They don't always pay me directly, right? Someone can buy a game in Target, in Walmart, in a mom and pop store, in a gift shop in the national parks, right? So, okay, actually, though, those are my customers. Well, no, they're just one of my customers. Well, what if they don't buy it from me? They buy it from a distributor. Oh, well, okay. Now I've got another customer. It's the distributor. Do they have the tools needed? Do I trust them to bring this high quality gaming experience to the board game store that ultimately then gets hand off to the customer? We are so disintermediated these days from people that we serve to our customers. We can either choose that as being okay, or we can make efforts and plans in order to engage them effectively along the journey that they're experiencing, right? They have a mission, they have a vision, they have values. They are not necessarily the same as mine. So how am I serving them, putting their best interests in mind? Because when I put their best interests in mind with a clear vision of where we're going, we'll see success.
So good. So good. Yes. And taking the leadership role of aligning everyone, right?
Yeah.
Because alignment isn't just, you're not going to stumble into it. So someone's going to have to lead us towards alignment and unity between all those stakeholders. So taking the leadership role to do that proactively is so good. Also, probably extra credit for being the first person to ever use the word disintermediated on the podcast. Well done, Matt. That's very
good. Okay,
incredible.
There we go. Winning.
Okay, so if we're to look back over kind of the career trajectory, we have the accounting consulting job. I think it was for a big five consulting firm. From there, you go to the church planning organization. From there, you go to Cigna. And then what happens now?
So at this point, again, I think every single point of my career, the moment I am most content, with the exception of the toxic work culture of the church, the moments I'm most content, an opportunity arises. And in this case, I had two very talented creative friends come and say, hey, Matt, we've been making some really great board games. We need help making a really great business, right? I had just recently even started playing board games. I didn't really understand everything about that industry, but they had trust in me that I understood enough about business, really financial acumen, project management, operations. They were like, hey, help us build a business. And so about 5 years ago, I stepped into the role of director of operations and finance, really starting just as an owner, right? Hey, this is a side thing. Help us do some strategy, some consulting, help us decide where we should go, help us create a strategic roadmap. We wouldn't have called it that at the time. It was really just a whiteboard that then had bullet points of the next tasks, right? The early days of strategic roadmap. And slowly over the course of multiple years and success, you know, that becomes, oh, hey, what's the most important aspect of the business I need to grow in, right? Because we're still moving at the speed of trust where everyone is just doing what they're best at as much as they are able. So, okay, cool. What am I going to do? I'm going to work on supply chain management, make sure our inventory strategy is in place. Okay, next, I'm going to work on financial analytics and making sure our books actually give us insights into what's going on for profitability. Oh, what's after that? strategic relationships. All right, I've got these buyers at Barnes & Noble, Target, at our distributors. I'm going to start developing incredible rapport with them. Now that I understand the finance, I need to know, oh, that's my target customer. Let's work on them. Oh, cool. Now what about email marketing? Hey, let's start doing acquisitions. So we're just over the course of 3-4 years, we're doing the in the business stuff, right? Making games and making sure they're being sold. And then every day I'm waking up and going, what's the next thing I need to do to work on the business? And ultimately, over the course of 4 years, we grew. We grew from $250,000 when I started. That was our kind of our what we were on track for the year, to $4 million over the course of 4 years. And wait, what happens with that? All of a sudden, you can't just operate without clarity. Speed of trust now becomes how documented or standardized is what everyone's responsible for. Do we have a leadership team that represents the right decision makers that are able to have responsibility and take action in the most important aspects of the business? And our answer for us was no. Right? And so what did we do? Hey, Path for Growth. That was not a plug. Truly, truly. I remember 6 months, kind of 6 months after we hit that $4 million mark, stuff changed. The supply chain environment changed. Target, our biggest customer, stopped ordering from us. Mm-hmm. Not because we had done anything wrong. I promise you, it was not in the projection, but because the environment had changed. And we go, oh, okay, we don't have a process or system to talk about challenges and issues. We spent years working on opportunities, but are you ready to get punched in the face and start working through how you recover? And man, what a challenge, what a challenge. So that's where that leads to now I'm hiring a coach.
Man, so good. And we're still not even to the point where this takes another blindside turn and now it's like you are a one-on-one coach. Like, holy cow. Right. It's just, we need to make sure that we document who owns the movie rights to this story, because it's a pretty compelling narrative. If you look back at kind of that arc of those different roles, but also a series of transitions, what are the biggest lessons that you think God taught you through that maybe decade arc of career decisions, changes, transitions, and in each spot? What are some of the lessons that stand out, Matt?
Yeah, I think the first is, and I've it wasn't unique to Keymaster. It's, hey, when things are hard, it's really easy to be needy before the Lord. It's really easy to seek Him. Those times in the desert are the times that I've found it's most easily, I'm most easily able to seek the Lord, because there's a need, right? And I think what I finally feel like I'm actively practicing healthily now is what I wasn't practicing healthy then. It's that in the times of reaping a fruitful harvest, it's easy to go, God, amazing, thank you so much. But it wasn't easy to be before Him, be low, be checking my heart, right? Because things are easy. And so I'm always self-aware of that when things aren't easy. Oh, Lord, man, I haven't been seeking You. I haven't been regularly before You. Not in an awful way, right? Not in a, I'm seeking sin, but just there's that lukewarm complacency side that's so easy when you look at yourself and you go, man, I'm the reason for our success. Sure, I can point to things that I did really well that resulted in growth. But even Mark Cuban would say this, right? He would look around, someone asked him like, hey, the richest people in the world, are they fun to hang out with? And he goes, yeah, like the 80% that know they got here, I'll say by providence, he'll say by luck, who got here, they know, they're chill, they're cool, they get it, they were lucky. The 20% that think that it was all them, man, I don't like spending time with them.
So good. Yeah. I just think sometimes I heard this analogy the other day, is it's like, man, we want so bad to reach the destination, and then we do, and we forget to say thank you because we're too busy doing our end zone dance. And yeah. It's like, golly, I don't want to be that leader, right? It's like, I mean, that's not a leader, right? When I watch the guy, I mean, when we watch the Super Bowl this Sunday, it's like some of these guys, you're going to watch them, you're like, oh, so you could have practiced more this week, but you spent more time crafting this elaborate end zone dance that you put together. And it's like, yeah. I don't want to be that leader that is like so stoked to, once they get in the end zone, get in front of the camera. But rather just like, man, when you get in the end zone, just be grateful and get back to work. Like, I think that's so, it's so easy to drift from that standard.
Oh, yeah. It gets worse. And you can apply this to yourself. It pains me to say this, but I remember a game when Alabama, Lane Kiffin's their offensive coordinator. Lane Kiffin's on the sideline. He calls a play before the ball is hiked. He puts his hands up in the air and he goes, touchdown. He knew that the play that he called was about to result in a touchdown, right? Receiver runs up the sideline, catches the ball wide open. No one's within 25 feet of him. And the receiver gets to the end and does a dance in celebration. It's like, dude, yeah, you caught the ball. You ran the route. I get it. You executed on what someone handed to you and you did your job. You don't get to have the cameras on you right now. Who should it be on? It should be on Lane Kiffin, who's over here going like, I called the right play. And that's the same thing in leadership. We're so quick to take credit for things that whether circumstantially or our team, we're so easy to be the one that does the end zone celebration when in reality, what should we be doing? You know, we should be turning around and saying, thank you. What a great play call.
Yeah. What all conspired to put us in this position, or go give your offensive lineman a hug real quick because you really needed them. Yeah. That's a really good way to look at that, that kind of anecdote or that metaphor. There's two other things that stand out to me just in hearing you talk through your career path. It almost seems like just out of sheer practice and experience, there's two skills that you've been challenged to develop. And number one is, I would love to know any principles that you've absorbed as it relates to decision making, because every single one of those transitions represented a decision where it's like you're leaving something that is relatively stable, even if it's just in the fact that it's familiar, and you're leaving for something that is unfamiliar and unknown. So what are principles around decision-making? And then the second thing that I'm really interested to talk to you about, and we can split it into two, is it's almost a meta skill. You've developed the skill of learning new skills, right? So it's like you stepped into an accounting group and you learned how to do forensic accounting. You stepped into a board game company and learned how to do that. You stepped into church world and learned how to do that. And so I would just love to know what you've learned principally about the skill of acquiring new skills. But let's start with decision-making. Yeah. What are principles that stand out as it relates to decision-making?
Yeah, I mean, the first that comes to mind is Peter Drucker, right? Leaders make decisions at the highest conceptual level, right? And I love the Donald Rumsfeld quote. I think he's a student of Drucker. And how did that play out for him? He said, I don't make a decision that someone else on my team can make, right? I'm unwilling. I am going to hold the line right here that I'm not going to make this decision if someone else on my team can make. And I've seen that is something that I've had to learn, right? Talk about learning skills. Even when I started coaching, right? Five qualities of the coach. Even as I'm learning, oh man, I am so assertive. I'm way more assertive. I'm way more likely to jump in and make the decision than I think. I don't have an accurate view of myself. But I think about when I'm training and developing people, it goes back to the Chris Voss tools of extracting. You want someone else to solve your problem. Ask them questions until they solve your problem. I think that's the biggest thing. I think, how does that play out? That played out in how we were trying to solve for, Target wants our game. They want our game. They want it in 3 months. Well, it takes 5 months to manufacture board games and get them to the US. Okay. Hey guys, what are we going to do? How do we solve this? I'm asking those questions because I don't have the answer, right? And that, what does that lead to? Now they're helping me solve the problem. And then I go, okay, so what should we do? And someone says, well, let's reduce the case pack to 4. Hey, instead of packing them in packages of 6, let's package them in packages of 4. And now we've doubled, or we've increased how many cases we have by 50% and we're able to fulfill the order. So that's just a very tactical example. But like I just learned, when I try to make all the decisions, what my people are unhappy because they're like, I don't have autonomy. I don't matter here. I'm just a cog. And then two, I don't always land at the right decision because I'm not the smartest person in the room.
Man, I feel like that theme is like riddled throughout Proverbs in just like the one that calls themselves wise. So the one that thinks like, oh, I'm smart, I'm intelligent, I have all the information I need. That person is a fool, right? And so the minute you start thinking yourself as like, oh, I've got the wisdom it takes for the situation that I'm in right now, you are a fool, right? But then the thing that I constantly have to be reminded of, and God constantly reminds me of in my morning time, is it's like, man, just perceive yourself as a beginner. Just like, you know, that the amount that you don't know far outweighs the amount that you do. And what's crazy is like, it's that person that says, I'm not wise. Are you kidding me? That ends up making the wisest decisions.
Yeah. I've seen this play out so many times too, of like where I think, you know what? You know, the most important thing that we need to work on this quarter, social media. Like, you know, it's like, I don't know, you crank yourself up. You kind of have this pet project, right? And then what becomes the ultimate aim in your life? It's making sure that your pet project gets done. And what does that ignore? Again, we're back to square one. If you don't have clear aim organizationally, if you don't have people that are constantly checking in, are we locked in on clear aim? Then it's easy to get off track.
That's so good. I'm glad you brought that up because I think that we work with a lot of leaders that would probably fall under the visionary category as it relates to rocket fuel. And visionaries are very persuasive, but the thing that I've seen about visionaries is that they're also super easy to persuade, right? Like, because they're so optimistic, right? And yeah. I am this guy, right? So if a visionary leader that's hyper creative, hyper energetic, hyper charismatic coincides with a marketing agency or a social media marketing company or a book or a thought leader or a leadership development company that talks a good game and that is very persuasive, that visionary leader will literally say, you persuaded me. I'm going to change the entire trajectory of my company because I got so energized by this book or by this podcast or by this talk, right? And I feel like it's exactly what you're saying is it's like you're making it your pet project. And it's not even you that's leading your company at that point. It's just the loudest marketing voice that's approached you in the past 30 days. And so having people in the room that help you filter and determine, okay, these are all the things we could do, but what should we do? And what are we actually going to focus on?
It's like in the movie Up, Doug, the dog, squirrel, right? All the dogs, you know, they see a squirrel and they look in that way. That's just such a great analogy, myself included, for visionaries. The problem is if you don't have an integrator or you don't have someone on your team who's able to say, hey, Doug, look on back here, right? Look on back here. Then what's going to happen? You're going to chase the squirrel. It's easy. It's too easy to chase the squirrel. The second principle that kind of came to mind is you have two options. You can either work in the business or you can work on the business, right? And I think that was a paradigm that I didn't understand until I was a small business owner. Because, right, as a middle level leader, you know, you don't get the opportunity to work on the business as much because you don't have as much autonomy to go, oh, I'm going to change my department or I'm going to change how me and my peers operate. You have to be able to manage up. So when you're in that leadership position, it's really easy to check tasks off your list, even as a visionary, right? Like at some point for me, I have a healthy dose of integrator. It was so easy for me to look at a hard week and go, I'm fearful of what's coming. I don't know. Like, what if we don't get that contract or... And I got to have this really hard conversation. That's the worst for me. I have to have this really hard conversation with this employee. And so, you know what I'm going to do instead? Man, I'm going to get really busy with this other task. Like I'm going to solve automating our inventory planning process. Hey, sorry. Hey, right now, this is the most important thing in the business. And so that reflection of I'm going to go work in the business and what's going to happen is I don't dedicate time to working on the business to identifying the most important thing that if we solved, everything else would be easier. It's really to go, oh, that's a good task. It feels good. I'm going to go get it.
That's right. And I really like that you frame that as in the conversation of decision-making, right? Because it can be very easy to play the role of spectator or victim that says, I have to work in the business. And it's like, well, now you're probably right because you've given away all agency you had. And so what would it look like to say, like, I'm choosing to work in the business, or I'm going to take responsibility for working on the business? That just subtle shift in language is really illustrates a shift in mindset and beliefs that will absolutely influence your behaviors. Anything specific stand out about what you learned about either training or learning how to acquire new skills?
One of my favorite websites in college and my early career was Let Me Google That For You. It is an actual website. And if you just need a 10-minute fun prank to play on someone, it's as long as you do it with wisdom, I could encourage this. Let Me Google That For You. You do it as an acronym. And all it is someone would ask me a question. I was the Excel guy in every role I've ever been in. People would say, hey, Matt, how did you do that? How did you build that in Excel? And so I would literally find whatever I'd Google. I got really good at Googling. I'd put it into Let Me Google That For You. And I would email them that link, right? Because it's a link. You type in what you want to Google search. And then it creates a hyperlink that you send to someone. And when they click it, it takes them to that Google search. It like moves your mouse across, you know, types it in, hits search. Okay, listen, I don't do it now, but in the early days, it was awesome.
And every time you did that, they were like, that son of a gun, that guy.
But I don't know if it's just a reflection of the time I grew up and how Google just became that thing that I was so enamored with. I just realized I can learn how to do anything on the internet. Mm-hmm. And so from the very beginning, and Excel was the, I think, like, let's get hyper-specific here, right? I needed to learn how to do things in Excel for my job. And so that's like searching a textbook. You know that your tool can do this. What are the things that you need to type in order to get the outcome you're looking for? And so I just learned at a really early on in my career, how to Google to find the answer. And I applied that to everything. Like I think about, man, that might be the most important skill that I developed over that first 8 to 10 years of my career that I immediately used to go figure and to learn how to be a CFO and then ultimately a CEO, right? Is I just Googled things. We need to do email marketing. Okay, well, what do I need to do? I need to learn how to tag people that purchase specific products so that I can do specific marketing to them. Now, you can't Google. You can go read a book that says, here's what you need to do. You need to tie your outreach to the actions they take. Great. So you can read a book that tells you the what, like what's the outcome, but like, how do you actually do it? Google is there. And the second is if you were to say, Matt, what have you spent more time on in your phone in the last 10 years than anything else? It's YouTube. YouTube is it can be a toxic distraction, right? I don't currently have it on my phone, but it also can be an incredible resource to identify. I'm addicted to learning, identify new things, right? I want to learn how to make bread. That's what I did 3 months ago. I started making my own bread. I did it by reading a book and watching dozens of other people make bread.
And it's so interesting that like we hear that methodology and it's like, oh, well, of course, like you read a book, you watch a bunch of other people do it. But it's like, let's just say in more broad categories, we say, oh, I just wish I could be a good communicator, or oh, mm-hmm. I just wish I could be an inspiring leader, or oh, I just wish I could be an effective CEO. And because it feels more broad and ethereal, I think we think the methodology associated with making bread doesn't apply. And it's like, no, like communicator isn't an identity. Communicator is a skill. And it's like, I want to be an effective communicator. And it's like, man, start looking for information, right? Start looking for representation in other people that are doing it. And then start identifying what are the standards and then start evaluating yourself. And then just get reps, right? Just start doing it. And it's crazy. It's like, you know, I think we often think like, oh, these things that we're focused on, they're much too complex to apply that strategy to. And in reality, I don't think that's the case at all. So I really appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah. I think that you actually, like, you just unlocked something for me in that moment of, well, hey, what is my algorithm? Right. I just finished reading Elon Musk's biography. I can recommend it if you want to, like, have a front row seat of what's going on in business leadership today. Like, you can read Benjamin Franklin's biography and be like, wow, this guy in this time, and you get to look at him end. This book is in the midst of asking the question, what's going to happen with Elon Musk? Right, wrong, or indifferent? Great recommendation. I think it's worth it if you've got the time. Because his algorithm is delete, 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 right? Everything he does, delete, delete, delete. If you don't add 10% back, you didn't delete enough, right? And so what is the most important part of that algorithm? It's the evaluation. If you don't add 10% back, you didn't delete enough. So I'm thinking about bread making. And this applies to being a CEO. How did I start bread making? Well, I started with, what's the recipe, right? How much flour, water, salt, and yeast do I need? And my first couple, not that good, right? Then what did I do? I took a next step of, like, okay, well, at this point in the process, I said, I want to improve on this one thing. I want to improve on my proofing. And so I watched videos on how to improve that specific part of the process. It's the same thing that you could apply over to leadership. There are foundational things. And I think so often we run to the capstone. We want to run to, I want to score my bread. I want to cut it so that it looks beautiful. You know, it's got that flaky exterior. It's got all these cool designs on it, right? Well, you can't get to that step until you learn the temperature you bake it at and how long and how to prepare your loaf properly. It's, as a leader, you want to be a great CEO. Well, do you know how to, you want to be a great integrator. Do you know how to lead a one-on-one meeting? Mm-hmm. That's just step one, right? Then there's next step of how, like, we could go on and on and on about this, but.
Well, that's right. I love it. Yeah, I'm very grateful. Aspen, in the past, gosh, 2.5-3 months has, I would put her in the quality of mastered bread making. She's adopted the skill of bread making. And meanwhile, I think I have mastered the skill of bread eating. I'm very good at it. But one of the things that I really admired about her in that process of learning how to do that, because she makes a loaf of sourdough bread now, gosh, twice a week, typically. It's just so epic. It's like my favorite tradition that she has, I think. But one of the things that I really admired about her acquiring that skill is, like, the first few times she did it, I asked her, like, how do you think it's going to go? And, like, what do you think it's going to be like? And she's like, she would literally say, I have no idea. And I'm kind of cool with that. Like, it may be awful, but I'll learn a lot. And it's like, man, I don't do that. I say, oh, I want it to be a beautiful, tasty, golden, shareable loaf of bread on first try. It's like, shut up, Alex. It's not going to be beautiful, golden, tasty. It's your first try, right? And so, like, the reason why you do the first try is to get to the second try, which will eventually get you to the 15th try. And then on the 15th try, you're going to be pretty good. But man, I can procrastinate and kick that can on try one. And it's like, if that's true for something as simple as that, man, in leadership, we can delay growth and progress so much. And so just as a practical, I want us to distill those four steps again, because this is something we've been talking about in the business a lot lately. It's information. Get the base level information, not everything. You don't need to read every book. Get the base level information, representation. Get around or watch other people doing it, whether that's in person or on YouTube, right? See recordings of other people doing the thing. Information, representation, action. The feedback loop is going to increase exponentially the minute you actually do something, yeah. Right? And you will learn so much in the process of doing, and then evaluation. So how did I do compared to the information that I read? And man, if you get on that trajectory with regard to any skill, you'll grow like a weed, right? Like if you actually apply those steps with intentionality. I think that's actually a setup, Matt, for the next question I had for you, which is, you've recently acquired the skill over the course of the past 90 days of becoming one of our really effective executive coaches, which is really cool. The first thing that I want to know is like, why, right? Mm. Why did you want to work within a team that is Path for Growth and do this role?
I think the first thing was I just have a heart. I spent time last year in the midst of coaching saying, man, why did God create me? What unique giftings and skills and passions did God instill in me? And what I realized in that was I want to be in and around and leading other leaders regularly and consistently. And I was looking at my business, which is a board game business. You don't get into board games to make money. You get into board games to start with money and keep money. That's the joke that we always said. Board games are not a highly profitable business. And the growth plan didn't put me in a place where I was able to lead a lot of leaders and pour into them and invest in them and make sure that they were operating at their strengths in a manner that, you know, they're operating as effectively as God has created them to be. And so I sat back and I said, well, what's one way that I could do that? Well, I could go back to the corporate world. And I'm going to be completely honest. I thought about it. It's great money in the corporate world, but I didn't think that would actually meet the longing that my soul and heart had. And then secondarily, I looked at coaching. It's like, oh, what? I benefited so greatly. The principle disorder also devolves into drama, right? I'd experienced that firsthand. And a coach helped identify, hey, there's some disorder here and it's going to devolve into drama. And when I saw that and I saw the clarity of it and I realized I can help other leaders identify the disorder early to avoid the drama, my heart just went, Lord, is this what you have for me? And the day that I was thinking through that is the day you guys posted the job. It was this moment where the Lord was working on my heart. And there was opportunity, right? I had the opportunity to hand the reins of CEO to one of my business partners. And that's what made sense for this next season of our business. I knew it was time for me to let another leader run. And so on that day, I was like, wow, I have the opportunity to learn how to be a coach. Something that I was like, oh, I might have some natural talent here. Maybe I'll use some honing. Wow, Olivia. I was like, you know, I'm like a commercial, like, yeah, I need a little knife sharpening. No, it's time to turn this into a katana, the sharpest sword you've ever seen. So I think number one, I was driven by the desire to serve, having been served and realizing that potentially served a little late. And so we did encounter drama in our business. And having walked through that and stewarded a business through chaos and stewarding a business through conflict, I realized, man, I want to be there for leaders, one, going through that. And I want to be there to lead with leaders to, two, help them avoid that. Not just, though, the negative side. I think the other part of it was I wanted to see people flourish, right? It's not just let's avoid the pitfalls, but man, let's find that scenic route where you look out and you are inspired by the wonder and awe of what God is asking you to steward. And not just be addicted to growth and this amazing company that you built and the financial blessing of that and the impact you're able to have on others, but to really go, life is meant to be lived, right? We're called to create culture. That's the first thing that God said to Adam and Eve. Go fill the earth, subdue it, create order. Look what I did. I made order out of nothing. Go and enjoy it. This is a job I'm giving you and it's a great joy. I wanted to help leaders experience that and to smile and laugh and be able to go home to their spouses and say, man, what a great opportunity the Lord has given us to serve. Not to say every day is sunshine and rainbows. It's not. I'm a 7 on the Enneagram. I want it to be. And I have gone through a plenty of gloomy, stormy days. But man, I've been around leaders who they spend more time in the gloom looking down, not even knowing that it's gloomy above. Or I've spent time with leaders where it's sunshine and rainbows And again, what are they doing? Their eyes are down. They can't see the glory of God or the joy that's set before them because they're consumed by what's going on in the business today. And so I think those are the things that came to mind that ultimately led me to a decision to pursue this job.
Man, well, as the CEO of the company, I'm super grateful that whenever I ask our team members, why did you decide to work here? It doesn't meet an answer like, you know, I've been asking myself that same question. So yeah, man, it's just like your passion as it relates to the work that you're doing with people and the results that you're already getting with your customers. It's just, it's visceral. And I'm just so stoked you're a part of all this. It's just the way timing has worked out with, honestly, golly, I can honestly say this with every member of our team right now. Like you can just point to specific things and specific timing where it just feels like God ordained in so many ways. And I'm just so grateful that you're a part of this. You got put through the ringer as it relates to an interview process that has been specifically designed by Olivia Graham, who's our coaching manager, but then had multiple members of our team involved in it. So you got put through the ringer just to get in the door. And then, holy cow, you really get put through the ringer to go through a 90-day process that has everything from, I mean, intense amounts of content absorption, intense amount of mock calls where you're coaching someone completely for free, practice calls with customers that opt in to help us out. Like you've gotten so many reps and just been through intense, relentless feedback sessions. I would love to know, like, what's one thing that you feel like you've learned in that interview and training process that you really feel like, man, this has influenced me, not just as a coach, but also as a leader and as a person.
I think the quality of your questions that you ask as you evaluate what you do. So specifically in my training process, I have watched myself over and over and over again. And it's one thing to record yourself, whether it's for public speaking or in my case, recording a coaching session. It's another thing to watch yourself, a recording of yourself with a specific outcome in mind. Olivia just did an amazing job of crafting 2 to 4 questions every time that I was watching myself. And these questions gave me a framework not to just watch it and go, man, I did a good job. I did a bad job. Oh, this is bad. But actually, it wasn't about did I do it well or did I do it poorly? It was, what do I want to amplify? What do I want? What was a tactical action that I need to take to improve on this skill? Or, hey, when was this not energetic or smooth? And so the combination of specificity with which you're approaching your evaluation and the extra help of a leader who is able to then specifically craft, hey, I really want you to watch minutes 6 through 9 and watch with this lens on. And then after you watch it, talk to me, what did you see? Not, this is what I saw, Matt, you need to get better at this. Matt, I'd love you to watch this section and ask yourself the question, what do you see? And then when I got follow up with her, she goes, oh man, I saw that too. What are we going to do about it? It was an incredible experience. And I mean, I'm just thankful to that. I'm so excited too for the next coach, whenever that is, right? What did we do? One of my success statements was identify improvements in the onboarding process. And I feel like I've bragged on that, not my improvements, but I tell all these leaders, hey, Matt, how's the going? How's your training? And I go, man, you know what's incredible is that we're making the training better for the next person. And just being able to brag on that. I can already brag on the onboarding process. I can brag on, you know, being a part of the team and our hiring process. But the fact that we're getting better every single day.
Love it. Yeah, I feel that way as well. And it's one of the things, like, we built a model that feels like such a gift from God for me is like, it's like the people that are representing our company on the front lines with our customers every single day. Those are our one-on-one coaches. And we've just got such a wildly high caliber team. Like our coaching team meeting right now, whenever we all get together, it's like one of the things that I like simultaneously look forward to it. But then I'm also like, this is kind of an intimidating group of people. I better have my act together. These people are sharp, right? And it's like, that's just such a gift to be, I mean, in such an iron sharpens iron environment where everyone is just growing at such a rapid rate and with such intentionality. So, and you've just already added so much to that. You already have a handful of customers that you're actively walking through intensives with and getting into the one-on-one coaching rhythm with, which is so cool. You're guiding them through the fundamentals. I'd love to know just if people are listening to this and they're like, okay, well, I'm an impact-driven leader. I own or run a business. Like, who are the people that you really feel like you can win with, Matt, in a specifically in a one-on-one coaching interaction?
Right. One of the things that in speaking to Kyle, our other coach, the other coach on the team, that he told me is like, Matt, your customers are going to need to borrow belief from you. These are people that are showing up. They know they need help. And there's two types of people that show up. There's people that know they need help and think they know the answer. And there's a second type of person, someone who shows up and says, I know this is broken. Right? We talk about internally a lot, felt need versus real need, right? Someone comes in and they say like, oh man, I see all this smoke. A customer that comes in and goes, oh, you know what? I need a coach to help me identify which one of these windows to open to get the smoke out of here. You know, versus someone saying like, hey, I see all this smoke. Can someone help me find the fire? That's not necessarily speaking. I don't think anybody's going to be able to identify as like, I'm the window person. I'm the person that's willing to come in and start the fire. But I think customers who go, I'm an expert at making board games. Man, I'm not an expert at being a CEO. I need someone to help me be a CEO. Man, that like I've seen that play out in a couple of my customers already. And the ones that are showing up and they're like, okay, I don't have to borrow belief as it relates to, you know, are they going to understand me? Are they going to, you know, are the fundamentals actually going to apply to me? They're going in and saying, I know that you're going to ask me the questions that are going to reveal the answers. Man, that's just powerful when someone comes in with that level of humility and the intensity, right? You can't just come in and say, I'm at the wit's end. Like, I'm tired. I'm exhausted. I don't know how to solve these problems. But someone going like, man, I'm really ready to tackle the most important problems in my business. I just need someone to help me aim. Not to aim me, but to help me aim. That's been a huge win.
That's right. Yeah, man, so cool. And I just love that you hit home that last part because I just see evidence of this in your coaching already. And I see a ton of evidence in the community. It's like, we've got a bunch of people that have such wildly strong intentions for their own growth, for their business, for their team, for the impact that they want to make. And oftentimes, like those intentions, they're so good, but they get pointed in a bunch of different directions inconsistently. And just, man, once you get that person on an actionable plan that says, we're going to take all of those intentions, consider them all, and then line them up and put them in an order that looks like you putting yourself in order, putting your business in order, then defining vision for what you want to do over the course of the next 3 to 5 years. And then we're going to start taking actionable steps to hold you accountable to that thing. Like those people just blow the lid off of things. And it's just so, so cool to see. Like if someone's serious about action, I think we've built a process now that it's like, oh, we can help you define and then take aggressive action that creates results, right? And it's not just results for you. It's results for like the people that you deeply care about and are called to serve. So I feel like before I get to the last question, I should mention like Matt does have openings right now. If you're interested in working with him as a one-on-one coach, we'll put the link for the application. We're actually doing a free trial right now, which is really cool. Matt, I believe in that free trial, we're offering a bunch of stuff. People are going to fill out a fundamentals evaluation that's going to be a little bit like a physical of their business. Out of that, they're going to get 2 free calls with you where you walk through some of the essential parts of kind of getting the structure in place necessary to move forward with an actionable plan. And then they're also going to get access to all of our content within the app at Path for Growth and get visibility in everything we're doing with the community. We'll put the link to apply for that free trial in the show notes of this episode. Matt, is there anything else you'd add just in terms of what's available there or the type of person that you'd be interested in working with?
We talk often, you can either spend your time or invest your time. We are offering 14 days of time that you can choose to invest in, right? You know, even if at the end of that 14 days, you're going, man, what, like, you're not going to get to the end of the 14 days and go, oh, I don't see growth here. But you're going, like, how do I pay for this? Well, guess what? At the end of the 14 days, you're going to have invested time to work on yourself and your role in the business. And you're going to start to reap fruit from that already. And then by then you should have a vision for, okay, hey, if I can start to get myself in order, well, now I can start to get my business in order and I can start disseminating leadership and responsibility to my team. So I would say the biggest thing as far as someone coming is if you've got curiosity, now you have an opportunity, right? This is truly a 14-day free trial where you get coaching. You're going to be in and around our community. One of my favorite things we do is this office hours, right? You get to come and sit around other business leaders and hear what they're dealing with, the challenges that they're overcoming. You're going to be able to speak to them. They're going to be able to speak into your business. Invest those 14 days and see what investing your time and working on the business can reap as far as the fruit after that.
Absolutely love it. Obviously, we're super passionate about one-on-one coaching, but even I'm just starting to get super passionate about this free trial because we're seeing people come through the free trial. It's like, holy cow, you mean in 14 days you can do that? Like, holy cow, it's just so cool. So love that the team put that together and love the way that we're already walking people through it. Okay, final question for you. I think one of your giftings, Matt, is like you are just very good at encouragement. I think that's something that God gave you. Like you're very good at affirming people and then also providing a little bit of that assertive energy to move forward. And so I'd love you to talk to a very specific person. If someone feels like they're just in a funk right now, right? Like they maybe have lost momentum. They feel like they've stalled out. Maybe they've even made a couple of poor decisions in the past that put them in this spot. Put on your Coach Matt hat. How would you talk to that person?
Yeah, man, I've been in that funk, right? So I've been in those moments and I can just think of people around me who they came and they asked a couple of questions so that I could lift my eyes up just enough to say like, oh, what's the next step that I can take? So often when I get into a funk, I see all of the problems, right? And it's not, they're not even like real or felt, right? We talked about real or felt need. I have all of these needs and I go, I can't do all of this. And I've been there already with customers. I've just so much to do. And so we ask the simple question, okay, hey, well, what's the one thing that if we were able to solve, fix, improve, level up, would make everything else easier. Mm. And I think when you're in a funk, it's really easy to say like, I can't overcome this. I can't do this. But having one person just come alongside you, help you stand up and say, hey, what's the next step you can take? Wow. That first step, now we got a little momentum, right? We've got direction. Once we have direction, what we can get momentum. One step. Two steps, three steps. And by the time you're taking that first step, some of the clouds are going to start breaking apart and you're not going to feel all of these needs. You're going to be able to focus and have aim towards momentum.
Mm, man, you get me fired up. I love it. Thank you so much for your time. Thanks even more for just choosing to be a part of this mission. I really get the feeling we're just getting started, man. So let's go.
Let's go.
Well, man, I'm so grateful to Matt for his perspective and just for his passion for this mission of helping impact-driven leaders step into who they were created to be so that others benefit and God is glorified. If you're interested in working with one of our one-on-one coaches, we mentioned that free trial in the episode. The link and all of the information around that is in the show notes of today's episode, or it's available at pathforgrowth.com. Y'all know this. We're rooting for you. We're praying for you. We want to see you win. Remember, my strength is not for me. Your strength is not for you. Our strength is for service. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go.